Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona and Rebecca. I realize you have a legislative update for our listeners today.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Doing well, Rebecca.
Hi, Mark. Yes, we do have a legislative update. Just last week, Congress extended the deadline for the EB5 program from September 30th to December 8th. Mm-hmm.
It's like
and that has, yes, it has our office in a frenzy, but at least it's not the last minute deadline where we're waiting till the last minute to September 30th. But Mona, as we've seen this 2 years now, we've been doing deadline after deadline. Do you think this is the last one?
Well, you know what? It's Congress. Anything can happen. But from what all I have read and heard, I do think that this might be the last deadline. But to give us the clearest picture as to what Congress is thinking, if anyone can know that, we welcome back a previous guest, Peter Joseph.
That's right. We are delighted to welcome back to the show our first repeat guest to EB5 Investment Voice. He joined us this time last year to discuss the American Job Creation and Investment Promotion Reform Act of 2016. That episode was a great prelude to what was proposed, and we're continuing that trend today with another legislative update. Welcome back to the show, the Executive Director of Invest of the USA, Peter Joseph.
Pleasure to be here, Mark, and I look forward to updating everyone on where things stand legislatively with Congress on EB5 and what to expect and how you all can get involved in making sure the industry speaks with a clear voice in these key months coming up.
Peter, just to remind our audience, yes, you are a repeat guest, and after 46 episodes, it just shows that we don't have repeat guests often, do we, Mark?
First one.
Peter, just to remind our audience, who and what are the IIUSA?
Sure, and thanks, Mona. So Invest in the USA, or IIUSA, as our acronym goes, is the trade association for the EB5 regional center industry. We have members that are from all the different professions that are involved in the EB5 program, whether that be developers, attorneys, financial services, such as banks or broker-dealers or investment advisors. And then, of course, our core members, which are regional centers, which are really engines for economic development and job creation across the country. We have members from all across the country that provide EB5 investment funding to diverse kinds of projects, whether it be industry-wise or size-wise. And so we really have a diverse and a large membership that gives us a national platform to advocate for maximizing the economic impact and benefits for EB5 and to use our platform also to educate the industry and hopefully make everyone's job a little more informed and a little easier so that we can get to the job creation purpose of the program more efficiently and more effectively.
Well, it's fair to say then, Peter, that you are the voice of the EB5 industry.
Thanks for support from people like you, Mona. That might be the case, and I appreciate that.
Well, you are one of the best people to be able to discuss this whole legislation aspect with us. And I think the biggest question we have now is, yes, it's moved over to December 8th, and yes, everybody understands that Congress is incredibly busy right now, but are we close to a deal?
So I think in terms of finding a compromise on EB5 legislation that could be passed by Congress before the next deadline, I think we are closer, and we've had a lot of work on the congressional side in moving towards hopefully a solution that's much needed for the industry right now. How close exactly we are, I'm not exactly sure, but I think we are at a unique time in that we have important stakeholders represented by congressional offices, both in Judiciary Committee leadership and congressional leadership, that are all reporting progress towards something of an agreement. And if and when that occurs, that will be a very important new milestone on reaching the type of compromise that really could deliver on what we need, which is this long-term legislative solution.
Peter, is it the same? Are we dealing with the same players, Senator Grassley, Senator Leahy, Senator Goodlatte? Because if it is there not this lethargy of this just carrying on and on and on?
Well, you know, I think there are a couple of new factors. And One is that we have the congressional leadership, including Senators Cornyn, Majority Leader McConnell, Speaker Ryan, and others who have spent a lot of time working with Judiciary Committee leadership that have been working on this issue for so long on working towards a solution. And it's not clear exactly what any kind of agreement would look like exactly, but the fact that those parties continue to spend as much time as they do on finding a legislative solution to EB5, I think is a very positive sign, and it means we have to be ready for the next round of the process, which hopefully will be a new draft legislative text or other substantive policy issues for us to comment on as a organization and industry and be ready to do so quickly. So I think it's going to be a busy few months ahead for Congress coming up.
Peter, most people overseas are worried that the program will close. And I think it's fair to say as well that no, I don't think the program will close or shut down.
You know, I think that the odds of that happening are certainly slim. We don't want to take anything for granted. And Congress is at times a rather unpredictable body, but EB5 is broadly supported. But I think we need to make sure that those that are feeling concerns are getting engaged and figuring out the right ways to make sure that we are, as an industry, making our voice heard and articulating exactly what the effects would be of different policy reforms on job creating activities, which matter so much to the representatives who are at the negotiating table.
And for the listeners, our investor listeners who are listening, and even the developers, I think one of the biggest issues that keeps coming up every time we have an extension is whether or not the 500,000 will increase. And of course, at this point, we are still, it's a continuing resolution, which would mean that the 500 would continue as is until December 8th, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so Peter, as we know, DHS, or Department of Homeland Security, has proposed regulations, and now we've heard that, you know, they have a final action date for April of 2018. What could this mean for us? Is December 8th, do we think we're going to get a deal before December 8th, or are we looking until April?
So, you know, I think it's hard to predict exactly when regulations will move to the next phase, but that signal from the Department of Homeland Security, and including EB5 regulatory action in April as a final action date, is a good reminder that internally at the Department of Homeland Security and at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, where we do not have a current congressionally approved Secretary of Homeland Security nor Director of USCIS, so that we have acting folks from career USCIS folks running the agency right now, they intend on moving regulations as quickly as possible for them. The White House will have some sort of say on how exactly any regulatory action would fit into their own regulatory agenda. But I expect that unless we find a legislative solution in the relatively short term, working with congressional offices that have spent so much time doing so, that there will be more support or desire from Congress to see what regulatory action might take off their plate. And that's something that I don't think we can risk as an industry. And it's why it's so incumbent that we pursue this legislative deal with a good sense that regulations could be a far worse outcome.
Yes, we agree. The worst thing about the DHS regulations was the amount, 1.2 and 1.8 million. And I think the TEA was a little bit more draconian also than what's being proposed in the legislation, amongst other things. But certain things are the same, Peter, like the securities changes. Most of those will still stand.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important that we look at the now, which is USCIS is implementing a lot of new oversight, enhanced enforcement with their partners and other federal agencies that is enhancing the credibility and confidence in the program as, you know, fraudsters or any other bad actors are dealt with and face justice. But, you know, I think there are also other areas where legislative solution is the only thing that can take care of some scenarios and situations that are challenging the industry right now, whether it be visa numbers or capacity relief that is obviously an increasingly important priority for the industry as the wait times get longer and it has its effect on market demand in a variety of ways. But also there are a variety of different circumstances around failed projects that have put either investors or other projects or entire regional economic development plans in danger if these situations aren't handled the right way and if legislative solutions aren't provided for some of the situations, I think it's all the more reason we pursue that route to solve all the above.
Peter, we did want to discuss a little bit about visa numbers, but before we did that, well, you mentioned failed projects. I did want to stress that, yes, there may be some failed projects out there which get a lot of publicity, but there are a lot of successful projects. And I don't feel that sometimes the successful projects really are brought to the attention of the public as much as a failure does. It's obviously much, it's more of a media attraction. But our audience does wonder at times, because, you know, IIUSA is the voice of EB5, just how much influence does IIUSA have with Congress?
You know, I think we've enjoyed a lot of support as an industry and program in a bipartisan and also just in terms of geographic support due to the EB5's reach in post-recession economies and creating jobs and spurring economic development. That in and of itself gave us a great platform to use our tools, which are data and analysis and our policymaking and different other platforms that we have for communicating with other federal agencies and industry partners. When you add that all up, I think we've really positioned the program for long-term support in that same way. And so our influence with Congress, I think, is growing as we continue to deliver the kind of analysis and unbiased information on the effects of different reform proposals on economic activity that's happening in their states and districts. And that's something we take a lot of pride in. And I think our members are well served and also are really the lifeblood of that kind of activity. You serve on so many committees. I don't know what we would do without people like you, seriously. And it's such an essential part of industry development. And EB5, you know, is no different than any other industry in needing that platform to have its voice in public and government affairs.
Yeah, I agree. And you are regularly on the Hill, as are the lobbyists who are brought in by IUSA.
Oh, absolutely. We're located just steps from Capitol Hill, so we spend a decent amount of time up there. Our lobbyists are the best you can get, Akin Gump, which is seriously the largest lobbying shop in Washington, D.C., and our public affairs team at Cavalry. Also the best you can really get. And that's really what we take pride in, making sure EB5 has that kind of credibility and credentials when it's being presented to decision makers in Washington, D.C. here, whether it be in Congress or other federal agencies or important institutions that we need involved in making EB5 work for the long term.
Yeah, because as we know right now, you know, China's in a huge backlog. There's possibly a 10-year wait before we see that move. And also, we've heard that Vietnam could be also in a retrogression by the end of 2018. And India is also going to be facing backlogs by 2019.
Yeah, so that's three of the major countries right now who are going to face backlogs. And it really does hurt the industry because already it's taking so long to adjudicate a particular investor's petition. So if we're talking about backlogs, I think that would kill the program more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I think the U.S. immigration system has a lot of areas where it needs improvement. How visas are allocated is actually generally something that has bipartisan support that needs fixing. How to do it is where there's quite the diversity of opinion among the political parties here in the country. But at the end of the day, EB5 fits in with, I think, pretty much any calculation that would potentially have bipartisan support for how you would reallocate visa distribution. In the meantime, it's important that we deal with what's on the table for us right now. We continue to advocate our policy platform, which includes dealing with some of the processing issues at USCIS in addition to visa capacity and the other key issues like targeted employment areas and making sure that the enhanced compliance requirements are actually workable and don't overburden businesses or our members and the industry at large. You know, these are all tied to one another, and that's why we got to see what's possible in this round of negotiations. And we're cautiously hopeful and optimistic that this next draft will, or our next stage of the process, whatever it looks like, will indeed feel like progress, and both in terms of getting something passed by Congress and in addressing some of these issues that we're facing as an industry.
Right. Well, our office did put a petition out on change.org a few weeks ago based on the AILA, that's the American Immigration Lawyers Association's white paper, which is all about solutions to the EB5 visa waiting line. And we received a fair number of signatures on that petition, right, Rebecca?
We sure did. I think we had about 250 signatures on that or more.
More than that. Yeah. And once you hit over 100 signatures, it does automatically get sent out to Congress. So we know that Congress are very much aware that they are thinking of this. But all the petition was trying to do was just make everybody aware and try and bring the industry together. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that nobody really objects to, the increase of visas.
Oh, absolutely. I think everyone that is involved in this advocacy on EB-5 that is in agreement that we need to find creative solutions and relief to this issue and make sure that whenever the political opportunities are there to and to find that relief, that we're ready to do so with good information and, you know, continue to make our points on just what's at stake. And I know you and I know this, and Rebecca and most of the listeners here, but what's at stake are billions of dollars of investments in projects that, you know, are tied to even more sources of capital that are relying on commitments to EB-5 that are really hanging out to dry, both with regulatory and legislative uncertainty, but also just the processing and backlog uncertainty. And it's something we have to make sure we address both here and now with things that we're doing operationally, whether it's helping to develop new markets and educate professionals, whether here or overseas, and making sure we actually have the right resources to do so, while also making sure we're documenting and articulating exactly the jobs and economic activity that are going to be much slower at minimum and at worst really blown up for no other reason than we can't figure out how to get the most out of our immigration system. And that's something that EB-5 really should be a shining example of.
Well, I think that's you've hit the nail on the head there, Peter. It's not just about immigration. It's fact immigration is just a portion of it. It's all about the jobs and the projects which are out there. And we certainly appreciate all the work that is done by IUSA. And we regularly recommend our clients to be part of IUSA. I mean, do you have a few words on people who are maybe considering to join IUSA? What are the benefits? What do they get out of it?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for all your support, Mona. And we've had a chance to work together for several years, and same to you, Rebecca. You know, the benefits of IUSA, aside from supporting what is just essential, especially during times when we have deadlines for Congress to reauthorize the program, which is supporting our advocacy efforts and making sure that EB-5 has the presentation here in Washington, D.C. that comes with having top-notch representation and all the work that needs to go on behind the scenes to make that effective. We also want to make your life in the EB-5 business community more connected, more efficient. We do a lot of reporting regularly on different industry statistics, whether it be processing times or other data that is relevant to business decisions at regional centers or projects or financial services or attorneys have to make on a daily basis. And then, of course, setting industry standards and developing best practices that help protect the industry from bad actors getting any sort of traction in the industry itself. And I know that's something that we take a lot of pride in as well and consider, you know, really interconnected with our advocacy and educational opportunities. And my last little plug is on the educational side, we have our conference coming up in Miami. We're looking forward to bringing the EB-5 industry to an area that could use the economic activity and relief after facing some serious hurricanes. These conferences are where you can get both connections to industry people who are involved in various aspects of the program, and then also hear from experts on the issues that we're facing today and make sure that there's good information out there to make good business decisions.
Peter, you don't have to, I mean, for some of our listeners who are not IIUSA members, you don't have to be a member of IIUSA either to A, attend, or even to share some valuable information relating to projects, or even, as you mentioned before, things like bad actors with IIUSA, right?
Absolutely. We encourage anyone to get in touch with us and to attend our events. And I think anyone who does will see quickly that our member benefits pay for themselves once over and then some. And we also help develop foreign markets. We have a banquet coming up in India on the 5th of October that, again, member or non, we welcome you to attend. But it's a good point, Mona, where we have information available on our website in person, whether you're a member or not. But we certainly make sure our members get the most out of the benefit that we do offer.
Yeah, we're looking forward to the Mumbai event.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you out there.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for coming on and giving us this legislative update. earlier on the episode, you mentioned we're getting closer, but I wanted to ask you, obviously, as dates pass and we extend dates, are we indeed getting closer? Is someone moving the finish line? Is anyone introducing any last minute or updated surprises or changes to what's proposed?
I think what's important about where we're at right now is that all of the different offices that are involved are reporting the same thing, which they are making real progress towards a deal and have made more progress than there's towards an agreement than there has ever been before. I don't want to speak for the offices involved or anything, but you know, I would think that means that goalposts seem to be in the same place from wherever they're sitting because they are reporting that indeed progress is being made. You know, that said, I don't know what exactly the details are of what might come out of an agreement like that, but I think anything that results from it will be a new milestone just from who would be agreeing on the congressional side, both from leadership in the Judiciary Committee and from both chambers of Congress itself.
Okay, so when we're talking about these agreements and these proposals, there's still some negotiations back and forth that's happening right now before this date. So things that could change, like investment amounts and other language, that's still all kind of, it sounds like it's still up in the air for negotiation until the deadline?
I don't know exactly when it's up until negotiation towards in terms of a date, but I think it's part of a fluid conversation of these key issues that will be under negotiation until they do come to some sort of terms of specific enough agreement that it gets to the next stage where either we see new text or we see a piece of legislation introduced or that we see some framework of a deal that industry has an opportunity to comment on. Hard to know exactly which one of those or something else that, you know, kind of represents any kind of agreement would be presented. But you know, I think that's an opportunity that we'll hopefully get to when the time is right.
Peter, Mark, I think it's important that people do understand also that getting to a deal does not mean that that's it. The legislation has to be written, and often that draft legislation has to be reviewed and rewritten perhaps three or maybe four times. So it does take a lot of effort to get to the finish line itself.
Oh, absolutely. Until we have a reform package that is passed by both chambers of Congress and signed into law, we shouldn't take anything for granted and make sure that we see this all the way through.
Well, so Peter, also in the news, you know, we're hearing, you know, President Trump has given us, you know, kind of a deadline as well for DACA clients and rescinding it until March. Now he's also wanting to bring in border security. So do you think EB-5 will be included or be attached on? As you said, we need a vehicle to push EB-5 ahead. And do you think one of these two will be a vehicle to push EB-5 ahead as well?
Yeah, especially as it's so hot politically at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So my crystal ball isn't good enough to know exactly whether or not EB-5 would be included in any sort of legislative action on deferred action or border security that results in these next few months. But what I do think is important is that we do all we can to get the EB-5 compromise legislative package, all the details, everything all worked out as soon as we can with support from not only the congressional offices that have been involved in spending so much time trying to make sure we get this right, but also from industry groups so that any opportunity that comes our way, whether it be in any sort of immigration-related legislative action or a broader appropriations package that takes federal funding more than a few months into 2018 and perhaps even towards the end of the fiscal year of 2018, at the end of September, you know, these are things that we need to be ready for. And to do so, we got to make sure we're constructively engaging as an industry in getting this process to the next stage in the short term and across the finish line, the medium and longer term.
So to translate all of that, Peter, stay tuned. And in the end of November, we may be able to tell you what's going on.
Well, Peter Joseph, thank you so much for coming back onto EB-5 Investment Voice.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable,
share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.